Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me, for the first time in about 3 weeks, which feels like 3 years in Ice Cube time, it's Dan. Welcome back, Dan.
Yeah, I'm a long-time listener, a first-time caller. Thanks for having me on the show.
Bruce from Flushing on the phone with us. And speaking of long-time listeners and not-so-first-time participants, we are also joined by Brian. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Good. Hey, how are you, Scott and Dan?
We're fine now that we're talking. I don't know.
Thanks for letting me back on, Brian, after you replaced me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we thought we were on the verge of having a Wally Pipp situation here on the Serious TV Drama Podcast. And for the non-baseball people out there who don't know what I'm talking about, that's a famous thing where Wally Pipp was a first baseman for the New York Yankees, pretty good player back in the early 20s, and he wasn't feeling well or something. I don't remember what the story was. I don't know if he was hurt or what, but they decided to put this kid into sub for him one day. And that kid was Lou Gehrig. Suffice to say, Wally Pipp really didn't really play much ever again after that. So whenever someone gets replaced by something like that, it's called the Wally Pipp situation.
I'm no Lou Gehrig, and I'm glad Dan's back.
But Dan certainly is a Pip. Anyway. Apologies to the listeners in advance. I've had a little bit to drink this evening, so I might be a little bit more loosey-goosey than normal, which is entirely appropriate because we are here to talk about the season finale of Legion. And I guess, Dan, since I don't recall us having any guests last season, so is this the first time that three people are going to be taking this on at the same time?
Yeah, so I believe this would be our first Legion-related three-way.
Yes, I was giving you the, I was letting you have the phrase there. So I don't know which one of us is Dan. You're Dan. You're Dan. David. Dan. Actor's name is Dan. Last week it took us like 15 minutes to remember the actor's name, which is crazy because it's Dan Stevens. Anyway, okay, since obviously we are in total ramble mode at the start of this podcast, which is not the greatest thing. We're acting like we've already been recording for an hour and a half, so maybe we should get started. So let's do what we came here to do and start talking about Legion Chapter 19. Now, I'm going to say right from the outset that this was, I would say, a somewhat satisfying, but not completely for me, finale, much like the season. So I think the finale was very reflective of the season for me. It's, as we speak about it, it's going to be kind of fun to note things that we definitely discussed in previous podcasts. So apparently we're a lot smarter than I thought we were. And we'll chat about things that we really liked and thought or were really curious about, and maybe some things that we weren't too happy with, whether it be from this finale or for the season as a whole. But one of the things that we've been waiting for, if not for not just for this season, but even last season, was a final real showdown between David and Farouk, and that is how this episode kicks off. That I really enjoyed. I'll say right now. I mean, Brian, you the last few podcasts, it's been fun you noting what songs they've used in different episodes. I think music's really always been a very important part of the series, not just stuff that's on the actual soundtrack, but how they've actually incorporated into the show. Much as they did in the first season, when I believe there was at least one or two musical numbers, if I'm remembering correctly. And we've actually had that this season, We had the big dance off, which was, you know, something special. We had a singing mouse, if I recall.
Right.
And here we get, I, for lack of a better way to put it, kind of a duet on for "Behind Blue Eyes" by The Who. It's weird to call a battle between the two who have been the main protagonists and antagonists, and we kind of need to use that term loosely with Legion, it seems now. I don't recall it ever culminating in kind of a sing-along as well. That was really delightful. It's a weird word to use for such a thing, but that's what I was thinking throughout it.
Yeah, I loved it, and I liked how it began, closed in on David, and then as it pulls out, you realize he's floating towards the face off, and really, you know, focused in the words in an appropriate way to set up, you know, the emotional part of what it was going. I mean, we've talked on some of the last few episodes about stuff maybe being a little too on the nose. The lyrics are pretty on the nose.
Oh, yeah.
I thought with the way it was shot, with he and Farouk floating towards each other, I really liked it. I enjoyed the opening and thought immediately it got the episode moving. And that's something we talked about that's maybe been a little lacking at times. The action jumped right off the bat.
Right. Dan?
Yeah, I enjoyed the way the episode began, for sure. It definitely was, I don't know, just the way they were shooting it definitely got me hooked a little bit quicker than usual, because they don't always start out with such you know, interesting camera movements and all that, so I managed to get into it pretty quick, and I enjoyed the music. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's just kind of like, I'm at the point now, just like, oh, there's a song that Noah Hawley or somebody like he's related to can sing, I guess. So, but you know, and I think it's regrettable they couldn't, you know, license a song by somebody amazing like the Eagles, but at least we got somebody, you know, good instead of, you know, mediocre or like the Doors or something. Yes.
Okay. I'm calling a moratorium right now on inside jokes that only two listeners will get for the podcast.
We only have two listeners. So
oh, yeah, that's true. All right. Anyway.
on the issue of music, let me say this, and I wasn't able to research it and find out, but to speak to what Dan says, when I Shazammed the music just to see the version, it said Legion cast as the performer. So I don't know if it's actually Dan Stevens singing, but it may be.
I believe it is.
And I believe it is. And later in the episode, when the Kinks song is played, it also says Legion cast, which leads me to believe that probably a lot of the music versions we've seen, the actors are actually singing the parts themselves. And, you know, just he did a pretty good job singing.
Yeah, I think we heard him sing on Downton Abbey, right? Like in some Christmas episode or something. So it definitely sounded like Dan Stevens singing.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And I was pretty certain it was Dan Stevens singing, much as the actor whose name escapes me because I probably won't be able to pronounce it anyway, who plays Farouk, was certainly doing his lines, even though he was doing it in a more spoken word style. And occasionally singing in Farsi, but still sticking pretty much with the words of the song. And yeah, Brian, I right along with you on the thought that, wow, you really probably couldn't have found a song with lyrics that were more on the nose for this moment and this show. I found that it still kind of worked in almost a winking at that fact kind of way. It's like, yeah, we know this is really obvious, but look how cool it looks, which is kind of something Legion's always been guilty of. It's like, yeah, we know we're not giving you all that much, but look how cool it looks. And speaking of things looking cool, I believe it might have been on an earlier podcast this season. When it was just me and Dan doing it, might have been that sequence between Farouk and David, their first kind of you know, tussle with each other, which, you know, becoming the different objects and the little homophobic wrestling moment or whatever. I think it was, I could be wrong, I can't remember which podcast it was, but I'm pretty sure it was probably that scene that inspired it. I said something along the lines that I'm wondering if the battles that take place between, here and in the future, David and Farouk, or what happened to Farouk and David's father, a.k.a. Professor X, were things that were more, you know, battles within their minds, you know, whether it be, whether these things are constructs that manifest on a different plane or not, but I kind of feel that's what we were seeing here. I mean, this rather almost Fantasia-esque animation of them fighting each other in all these different transformations, while the two of them are essentially just standing there or floating there or whatever. I don't know how much of that was actually physically manifest for people to see, other than, I mean, maybe people see colors in the sky, but I don't know if anyone else would see the actual animation in person, if that makes any sense.
I thought perhaps Lenny had a sense of the danger David was in, and I don't know if that's just looking at him, but when she finally took action, I mean, he was not doing well in the fight, which you and I had talked previously is surprising, because to believe Farouk's own words, David is more powerful than him. But perhaps, I think we learned in this episode, David didn't even know how powerful he could be.
Right. Well, a lot of the story of Legion from season one through now is, you know, it's David's origin story, and it's in what I think we didn't realize, or some of us didn't realize maybe, is that origin story was ongoing. It wasn't just finished in season one. It's season two as well, as we see by the time we get to the end of this episode, because of what David really, truly is becoming. Obviously, people who are familiar with the comic book kind of knew this already. I'm not a reader, so I was not that aware of it, although I had been told of it to some extent. I figured Noah Hawley has been given such creative license to do as he sees fit. I didn't really give it that much credence for the last year or two. One of the things that we talked about last week, which, hey, we talked about it and they did it. So the big tuning fork did come into play after all.
Mm-hmm. It would have been really lame if they didn't use it.
Well, it's funny because here's a show that shows us something, you know, they make a big deal in this one episode about something, and then it's cast aside. And as you said, it would have been kind of lame if they didn't do something with it. And we talked about it last week. It would be kind of a shame if they didn't do anything with it. But that's also been kind of, if I may dip into something negative about the show right now, that's kind of a hallmark of this season. They show us something. They start to develop something which is kind of different or interesting, and then they kind of just toss it away. It doesn't really come into play again, or it doesn't really get utilized to any great effect story-wise. The season is littered with characters with storylines that never really amounted to much or paid off in any way that was really satisfying. You know, pretty much almost every member of Division 3 had a storyline which was like, wait, that's it? You're not really going to do much more with them? You know, whether it be the Loudermilks or Potonomy or Melanie or what have you. So that's definitely one of the negative things I would say about the season overall. I mean, we've kind of talked about it a lot in the last couple episodes, so I probably won't spend. I don't really want to spend that. I don't personally don't want to spend that much time talking about it. If you guys want to, that's great, because I think I've said enough about it already. But I just thought that, like, hey, look, the tuning fork played a bigger part in the season than Tonami did.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think it was almost like the punchline to the joke we saw in this episode is that it landed perfectly. And when, you know, where we see where it ended up, it lands perfectly upright in a perfect position. And when we saw it be dispatched, like, you know, and it was flung away, you would have never imagined it would land directly straight up and down in perfect position. So it was almost like the second part of the joke was how it ended up being in position to then be a factor.
Right.
Well, yeah, because Brook pretty much screwed himself there because he's the one that threw it away.
Right. Well, it ends up coming off as though, I mean, obviously David had all these plans that were going into, you know, into motion here. This is one of those things that, on one hand, you think, well, that couldn't possibly be something he premeditated would anticipate being where it was. But then again, who knows? Maybe he very well did, you know? Because it seems like that was what Lenny was there for, you know, as opposed to just shooting, like, Farouk, like we had, you know, presumed in the previous episode, podcast. So, right, she rings the fork. They're rendered mortal. David proceeds to beat the crap out of Farouk. And then Sid shows up. And then we get a different kind of... I don't know if it's a battle, but it's definitely a confrontation. Which becomes one of the few things that really has... you're going from the resonance of a tuning fork to the emotional resonance of these two characters. I think all three of us are fans of the character Sid and particularly the actress, is it Rachel Hunter? Is that her name?
Rachel Keller, I believe.
Keller? Is it Keller? Okay.
I think so.
Okay. I will assume you're right because I'm known for screwing up names. I mean, she's always been, you know, one of her favorite things on the series. But I thought she was working double time here. And she was really... I think this is one of her most powerful moments on the show as a whole. This scene between her and David. And this, to me, was probably one of the two or three strongest parts of the episode, was this confrontation between them.
Yeah, I really thought she brought it. I mean, she was vulnerable about how she felt, but also steadfast in what she felt she had to do. And really, I thought, you know, Dan Stevens, you know, you see him drop from being in this powerful physical altercation, you know, trying to please her, trying to convince her, trying to... I thought both of them gave a great performance in this scene and throughout the episode.
Absolutely. Well, it was funny because when we were talking about the previous episode, and I think Brian, I think you had actually mentioned it, that the more that the Farouk manipulated Melanie went on and on about trying to convince Sid about David's actual nature, for us maybe it became less convincing as opposed to more convincing. But when Sid talks about it here, it all makes sense. Then, and maybe it's because it's not just because we're being force fed it by, you know, a slightly over the top Melanie. It's like, you know, taking it all into consideration. It's like, oh, she's right. And it creates a unique form of conflict for us, because I think at least at this point in the episode, although I believe attitudes shift shortly thereafter, we're kind of still probably rooting for David and Sid here, that for him to convince her that he really is, you know, a good guy, which is something they keep coming back to over and over with his character. But she was like, in a way, she was kind of giving the closing statement for the case that Melanie made last episode. And I thought her closing statement was a lot more convincing than the case that Melanie presented last week, if that makes any sense. I'm using terms you're familiar with, Brian.
Well, I had the sense that she went there for that purpose, but what really cemented it was David bashing Farouk with the rock. Like, she saw in that moment that what she felt, she saw it with her own two eyes in the flesh,
right,
that he really just wanted to bash his head in with a rock. And the look on his face was not one of resignation about something he had to do, but he was caught up in the joy of the revenge and of the punishment.
Right. It wasn't the grim-faced enforcer or anything. You know, this wasn't Batman beating up the Joker or something like that. This was someone taking a certain amount of pleasure in what they were doing, much like when he was torturing Oliver in the previous week. So
Dan Stevens is a really good facial actor too. I mean, the stuff he can do is just like, I mean, really impressive. I wonder if like Bill Irwin like gives him tips too, because I know he's into like, you know, really like precise like everything he does. So I wonder if you know, that happened.
That's interesting, because Bill Irwin is such a well accomplished stage performer, and I mean he was technically a, I don't want to call him a clown exactly, but he's kind of a higher form of a clown, but or a mime for that matter. But we talked before that Bill Irwin is a master of, you know, of physical dexterity and the way he can move his body, which it's nice when they actually give him, every once in a blue moon, they give him an opportunity to do that on the show, as we've seen. But the same, he's very extremely expressive with his face and things that he's done. So I would not be surprised if Stevens picked up a few things from Irwin while doing the show. So interesting thought there.
Can I make an observation?
Yep.
I thought the ultimate irony, excuse me, is that what she says when she finally decides what she's going to do is to say that I trust myself more, which is an allusion to the future Sid having David find Farouk to help Farouk beat future David. Both of them were acting upon future Sid, both herself and David, and future Sid is who she trusts. So there's an irony that David hid from her what future Sid had told him, and she had hidden from him what she'd learned, and all of it ultimately was to foil David, which in a way, to me, I'm still not sure how I feel about David. I still feel sorry for him in a lot of ways.
Well, to jump ahead for a moment, since we've been talking on the podcast for a while now, we kind of knew or suspected we knew where the show was going and with his character. I think oftentimes the best villain stories, as far as their origins are concerned, are the ones that have a certain level of tragedy to them, where you do feel empathy for the character, at least initially. Obviously, once they go on whatever, you know, crime or killing sprees, you know, over the course of, you know, their comic, different comic book stories, you don't feel that way anymore. But when you actually see how they became what they were, you can feel sorry for them. I mean, that's the case with a lot of villains over the years. Either, you know, doesn't matter, you can pick any number of them and you can find one like that. It doesn't matter. You know, either be one version of the Joker story or the Sandman or this one or that one. They all have that, there's a certain sadness to them. And they always have that if only factor. If only this had happened. If only someone had done this. If someone had done that, maybe they wouldn't be, they wouldn't have turned into the villain that they ended up becoming.
I totally agree with that. And I see that point. But I thought what made it seem sad to me is that in this instance, because of the way the future played into the past, and that's always an issue in time travel, is that I think what makes me more sad for David is there seemed to be an inevitability to it. And that's what I think is sad.
Right. Yeah, I could see that. Well, they did something very interesting in this episode. Because they could have played it just one way, and then the tragic nature of the story would have been because of the future time factor, that they end up creating it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, that their knowledge of what happened in the future ends up being, you know, at the core of what ends up turning him now, because they're acting on future information, but maybe they in their own way they're responsible for pushing him in that direction. Or completely in that direction. If the story had played just on that level, But something happens beyond that, which pretty much labels him. If anyone wasn't sure that David might not be such a good guy, if we were able to shrug off, you know, the look of glee when he, you know, was either maiming or killing people or whatever, as you know, as, oh well, you know, there are weird heroes that are like that, that are kind of, you know, they're darker spirits, but they're still heroes at heart, whatever. But he does something. He does something pretty bad. And this is a point that the moment it was happening, I realized what was going on. I was like, I need to say on this podcast. I've mentioned a couple times during the season, last podcast, and I think I mentioned it earlier this season as well, that Noah Hawley has been, for better or worse, both with Legion and at least the final, the third season of Fargo, is there like a music box or a clock chiming?
No, there's a train.
Okay, that's cool. Like,
I never have trains, and for some reason there's been two or three trains.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I just want to make sure I wasn't losing my mind there. Okay.
No, it's a train.
So
wow, we went from threesome to train. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, man. Oh. I left the lube in the... Anyway, so... What was I saying? Oh, Noah Hawley. That he has been not just influenced, but definitely been commenting on things that are going on today in society, in the world, in this country specifically. He did it on Fargo. He's been doing it on Legion to whatever extent. And these are things that are matters of, you know, what is truth, you know, what is fake, what is all that kind of stuff. Here he kind of did it again, and he did it in a very way which I thought was really fascinating. The more I thought about it, because basically what we have kind of a Me Too moment on the show, because after Lenny saves David from Sid's bullet, and by the way, did anyone think when Lenny fired off a rifle that maybe this is where Sid was going to lose her arm?
Yep. Yes.
I was very shocked she didn't lose her arm. I thought, oh, this is where it happens. So I'll add that to my list of things frustrating. Never found out about the arm. anyway. But what he does, I mean, basically he does this little David psychic spell on her, or as she refers to it later, even though not with a literal substance, he essentially drugs her. He, you know, takes away the memory of what had happened. And then, later, capitalizing on that, has, you know, their little version of their mental other plane sex with her. So, basically, he kind of pulls a Cosby on her, essentially. What I think now, what's fascinating about this, and I heard your side. This is why you need to think. Why not you specifically? Why people need to think about this? Because a lot of times when people over the last year or two, when people have been accused of these, you know, rather horrendous things, when it's someone that we like, an actor or whomever, someone that we up until this point we were fans of, sometimes our first instinct is to try to disbelieve it or kind of push it aside, like, oh, it's not as bad as all that. And I think it's Noah Hawley's kind of was daring us here. It's like, hey, guy, your hero, the guy you've been rooting for, this is something else he's capable of doing. Because if you really think about it, that's exactly what he did. There's no slicing or dicing into, like, well, no. That's exactly what he did.
You know? Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we even though he's unstable, we like David, but so when push comes to shove, he's really like, he isn't being any better than, you know, Kilgrave from Jessica Jones here, where he's just doing some really skeevy stuff. So then you have to look into the mirror and just be like, oh, you know, I didn't see it that way. Now I see it this way and I feel really uncomfortable. But now I need to feel uncomfortable about the fact that I didn't see it that way. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and this is something we've seen to a certain extent a few times on other TV shows, or, you know, and it's always like the better ones. I mean, there's certainly a Walter White moment like that on Breaking Bad, if I recall, his situation with Skyler, where we're made to feel really uncomfortable about their physical relationship at a certain point because she clearly doesn't want to be there, and she's, you know, or and God, we always refer to it, you know. I don't remember a specific moment. Pretty sure Vic Mackey's had a moment or two that were kind of made us go, I don't feel good about this.
But, well, to drive your point home,
yep.
The wacky little scene with Melanie and Oliver in the ice cube that's sort of cut in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
When talking about the past, Melanie says, poor Sid, the betrayal after the battle. And the betrayal is what he does.
Right.
That's followed up with her in Division III walking down the hall and Carrie saying, are you okay? And her sort of appearing roofied, like she doesn't quite feel herself,
right.
And says, I'm going to go lay down. And then that's when he visits her. I mean, it is, there's a very clear message that Holly was sending. And I watched the credits. Holly wrote this one by himself. So,
yep.
I mean, this is all him. It was very much that what he did was overcome her consent. Because he was so insecure about losing her that he did something terrible,
right? And what's I don't want to say what's funny about it because it's truly not funny, but I'm trying to avoid saying interesting as we were concerned last week. Is one of the issues we might have had with Melanie's spiel in the previous episode was and even before that. Was how much of it was just kind of almost stereotypical, you know, anti-man, whatever. And then David goes and does, like, pretty much one of the worst things possible. Like, the epitome of, wow, you're doing a real credit to your gender here, dude. This is not good, you know.
Oh, yeah. It was terrible.
Yeah. Because it was one of those things where I wasn't... It didn't... hit me exactly what was happening until he visits her, until he sees her. Then I was like, oh, geez. Then it all kind of came together in my head. It's like, oh, and that was where I thought, this is the moment. This is the moment where it all goes wrong. And then that's where, and what you, the thing you were referencing, Oliver and Melanie and the Ice Cube talking, was like, this is the betrayal that they're talking about. You know, and that wasn't, yeah. It wasn't the stuff from before. And like you said, and I had almost forgotten that she said after the battle. So he pretty much, you know, he was laying it out for us a little bit nicely there. Speaking of Melanie and Oliver, and that's the 3 years later in the Ice Cube thing. Since they tell us it's 3 years later, and it seems like they've been off in this existence this whole time, as they even refer to their own bodies being hidden, whatever. Should we be correct in assuming they just wrote out Melanie and Oliver on this show?
I wondered that because I saw something earlier tonight that Jean Smart had signed on to play in another show, and my only comment was, I wonder if that means she's leaving Legion, because they tucked both of them now neatly away.
Yeah.
It could be like they're not going to be in it next season because they clearly put a 3-year mark on it.
Yeah.
So they could maybe come back for the final season, or if it goes that long.
Right.
But I thought it was curious they said 3 years. And before I forget, I just want to say, I love that their memories were fading, and they called Carrie Glasses McLab Coat, and then they called the, you know, badass Carrie and that girl who kicks. The girl who kicks. They say we miss our friends, but they couldn't remember their names. But at the end of that sort of humor is when then they go, and then, oh, poor Sydney. They remember her name and remember what happened to her.
Right.
Which, you know, sort of, I think, is another sign if you didn't pick up, like, no, this was a serious deal. But yeah, I think we probably won't see them next season.
Oh, and before I forget, just to ring another bell for something we had said in at least in the previous podcast, I will say that little Ice Cube moment, which is 3 years later, there's our little time jump we got in the episode. It may have only been for that, but we were talking about it last week. Hey, do you think there'll be any time jump? They're like, oh, I'm sure there's going to be some sort of a time jump at some point. Even though if it's only that one moment, doesn't matter. Still a time jump.
Yep.
So okay, check another box for us.
Yeah, and to check another box that wasn't necessarily a call, but I thought it was curious how they dispatched of the Minotaur that Sid just walks up with the head, and that was all of it. And it didn't really disappoint me in the grand scheme of things. And then sort of in passing comments later in the episode, Badass Gary said, hey, I cut the head off the Minotaur.
Right. Well, yeah, the Minotaur also being one of those things that was like, was it something that was really utilized to any great extent on the show or not? I don't know. I was kind of ultimately like, eh. It was kind of like an interesting visual, but I don't really think they did all that much with it. So I wouldn't put it on my list of things I really liked about the season. Let's put it that way. I mean, I didn't hate it. It was just like, oh, okay. But other than seeing it crawl around on the walls a couple times, this is something they've been weirdly hinting at for a while, even ending at least one episode on an image of it. You'd think it would be a somewhat bigger deal, but it's one of those things with this show. I mean, if you scrape away everything and just reduce it down to Sid and David, then I think one can be a bit more satisfied or more happy with the show. If you start piling on all the other characters and details and then start thinking about how they were actually used, what they really amounted to for this entire season, it's like, it's compare this to, say, since it's Noah Hawley's show, the first two seasons of Fargo, which also had, you know, each one of those had a million characters and a lot of quirky, weird stuff, whatever. But you felt, even though there was one somewhat stupid thing in season one, for the most part, you felt at least every character got their, had enough screen time and had a payoff, whether we liked it or not, you know, to a certain extent on both seasons. This show, maybe, again, I know I'm repeating myself, maybe not so much.
Yeah, I think that's dead on.
Well, yeah, I mean, just like, even if Jean Smart doesn't come back, I mean, she probably could have, like, you know, filmed all of her scenes this season in, you know, two days for how little she was used. I mean, just like, here, smoke this thing for, like, you know, the entire day, and then, like, you know, we'll see you in 3 weeks. So, like, what's the difference? It just aren't using the side characters really well, which is, you know, disappointing. But
I almost wish they could have come up with a way just to have her almost like only make like one or two appearances total, and then you know, and then make the most of her limited screen time. You know, they'll be like, oh, like special guest star, or like special cameo, that kind of a feeling to it. But by dragging it along, like, oh, there she is, and she's just vaping again or whatever. I just keep saying it's vaping because I think it's funny now. I know you love,
but yeah,
I know you love the concept of vaping.
Yeah,
it was elephant bong all season long.
As opposed to elephant dung. Anyway, that's a different podcast.
But yeah, I mean, they definitely didn't, you know, I forgot what I was going to say. Never mind.
No, you were talking about Jean Smart.
Yeah, but I don't know what point I was about to make. For some reason, I just completely lost it.
I think it's unfortunate.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Just the trouble is, like, when you have all these, you know, side characters that could be interesting that aren't being really used well, but when you have that in a season where the plot is kind of shaky and there's just, like, a lot of really, you know, cool camera movements and interesting stuff, but it really, I don't know, if it maybe kind of, like, you know, almost highlights, like, the weaknesses of the season's plot just being kind of, like, eh. by seeing these other characters that are just there and they're not adding to anything because like what's going on isn't like super compelling. I mean, I thought this was a good episode and it, you know, it helped pay off some of the stuff that they were taking, you know, I don't know if taking forever to get to is the right thing to say about this season, but I definitely don't think they needed 10 episodes instead of 8. That definitely doesn't seem to, you know, not that I minded what I was seeing, but I mean, what I was seeing, I mean, I could have just been watching like a, you know, some really good cinematographers, like, you know, technical reel or something like that. I mean, for all that was going on plot wise, but I don't know.
I mean, the on one hand, you want again, you want to give the show all the credit in the world because Jesus. Okay, cover the microphone. Because you know, mm-hmm. It's a wild summer of imagination, and you get to experience and see so many things that you just, generally speaking, you don't get to see anywhere, be it TV or what have you. But yeah, when you strip it down to what's the story here. I mean, plot-wise, at least, it was, okay, they pretty much established from the very beginning, it's a race to get to Farouk's body, which basically takes place over, you know, 9 episodes, and they finally, by the end of the last one, and they have their little fight here. It never felt like there was enough other stuff going on, even though it was told to us over and over that because of what happens in the future, and who the real bad may eventually be. And in a way, that's one of the things I really liked about the episode is that they had the balls to go where they were telling us they were going to go, and you kept thinking, are they really going to do that? Are they really going to go there? And that's probably, I think that's what we're going to spend a lot of time talking about now, is, yeah, they go there. And they don't pussyfoot about... pussyfoot around it either. They were dead set on the track of David was going to turn. Yeah, he turns. Because I guess we go from, you know, the battle with Farouk, and then when we're back at Division 3, and other other than obviously what happens between David and Sid, although it would be foolish of us not to talk about the multiple personality situation with David and how that really manifests and plays a big part in this episode as well. I think that's right after Lenny's gunshot, where at that point we still don't know what's happened. Is that the part where suddenly David's in his room again, but now he's hanging out with some of the alternate voices or personalities that are usually in his head? Is that where that happens?
Yeah, it was right after she raises the gun and there's a shot and it cuts. You don't see the result and it right. cuts to him in the bedroom.
Right.
And that's when the you know, cheekily in the background, the delusion PSA is playing across the TV while he's talking to himself.
And, he's actively watching it at one point early on. So they're really just saying, okay, just so in case you guys hadn't figured it out, what we've been talking about in these John Hamm moments, we know we were kind of trying to make you think it was about this, and it was about this. It's really been about him the whole time, and this is something else we've talked about on this podcast. I don't remember if it's with you, Brian, or it might have been one of the earlier podcasts with Dan, where we should not be forgetting that the entire first season was questioning David's sanity and how much of what his issues were actual mental illness or not, or whether he was just being someone who had these abilities and was pretty much having like a gaslight situation. Being under medication. And I believe both last season and when we talked about it on this podcast earlier this season, I believe we came to the conclusion it was both, which is the conclusion they come to in this episode as well. It's both. I believe they actually come out and say that, right? I think
it's explicit, and you and I had that discussion about could it be one or the other or both, and we both said it probably is both based on how it was headed. And I'm I would be surprised if you and Dan hadn't had that discussion as well earlier in the season. But we definitely did have that, and they say it explicitly, you know, to leave it, to not leave any doubt that, yeah, you're very powerful, but you also have stuff you need treatment for.
You need to talk. That's right. Now I remember it's talk. You need to talk to somebody. That's right.
Yes.
I'm remembering it now.
Yes.
It's all coming back.
So I have a question to be the geek here about, the two posters in the bedroom during the multiple personality. One was Enceladus, which is the sixth moon of Saturn, which I looked up that it apparently is one of the only moons, bodies that far out in the solar system that has active volcanoes. And the other is Kepler 186F, which is a planet discovered by NASA, I think by the Hubble telescope. Mm-hmm. That is one of the first planets found in the habitable zone, which is far away from here, but within the range of a star similar to the sun. And I didn't know if either of those things have a comic book tie-in, or if maybe that was just some cool science shout-out that they were doing.
I think it's just a cool science shout-out.
Yeah.
Marvel comics don't tend to do much in any moons other than Titan, like where Thanos is from. Like, it's actually like Titan, the moon of Saturn in the comics, and not just some random planet. So, other than that, I don't think they've really done much with the other ones.
I just can't ever remember seeing like a poster. Those posters were so prominent in the whole scene. And, but.
It's hard to say because the only, to my recollection, when other scenes that have happened within, you know, basically David's childhood bedroom were always very darkly lit. So right. It was always very difficult to make out any very specific decor details like that. So, you know, it would either be the light from the lamp that was on, or maybe we were just too busy focusing on the fact the angriest boy in the world was hiding in the closet or something, or standing over him, or that kind of stuff. Of course, he didn't make an appearance in this episode. Although the more I think about it, it's funny. The more you think about what we've seen over the last two seasons and where the show ends up by the end of this episode, the more it seems like they were telling you this over and over that this is where this was going. This is not just a recent thing. You almost want to go back and watch season. Well, I would love to watch season one again because I love season one, but it'd be interesting to watch it again knowing where. For sure, where the character is going, and seeing if you can pick out the details and little things that were leading here, because they absolutely knew this is where it was going. There's no doubt in my mind. They didn't just look at season one as a self-contained thing, and then here's season two. Oh, let's make him a villain now. This was part of the process from day one. So I kind of would be fascinating to go back and watch them again and see the little things here and there, and where how it leads to this. I think. One interesting thing, because I don't know if anyone would know this unless they had the subtitles on, and because I was watching at a certain hour, I have to put them on just to make sure I don't miss any dialogue. When each of those other Davids are speaking. Each of their names is spelled a different way. I think literally one of them, the name is just like DVD, and the other one, it's like, or they just keep taking the letters and mixing them up for each version of them. And I was like, oh, that's because it was the new one, the more egotistical one. His name was DVD, and the other one, I think his name was like, you know, Avid or something like that. I just thought it was funny. Like, I don't know. No one would know that unless, you know, they happened to see a script for the show or had the subtitles on. So subtitles came in handy for that one. Captions, I should. Not subtitles. Captions, sorry. You get the moment with the multiple Davids, and we're wondering in one of the previous podcasts to some extent, if we would, number one, get any of the John Hamm stuff again, and if it would end up playing a part here in this show. Unfortunately, it wasn't John Hamm himself appearing, but this was kind of a little bit of that. You actually had a character watching it or something. And they kept playing it, and I liked how, okay, in case you're not getting it, we're just going to keep hitting you over and over and over with this point, you know, to the point where even one of the other Davids, you know, has the egg in his hand, and then, you know, and then it's cracked open, and they go into it and whatever. But this all kind of builds to what we think is going to be a trial. And would we call it a trial at this point? It seemed like it was kind of like an intervention, maybe, or something. I don't know how else to refer to it.
It wasn't a trial. I think it was an intervention, and
it was a trial. You don't know what you're talking about in these matters.
Well, in true Alice in Wonderland, you know, you have the trial after they've been found guilty, right? So, it was a setup, but I was curious if it would have went down exactly that way had Fukuyama not looked and seen what was going on. And there's the scene where, he's scanning what's going on and mm-hmm. sees David, in a position floating, and then sees Sid in her room. So I'm not sure it would have went down this way, but that certainly didn't help.
Much like what we were talking about before, that kind of cinches it.
Yeah, but I think it absolutely cinches it.
Go on, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, because we also have Farouk whisper to the mouse, and I wondered, was that like the same mouse that danced or sang earlier in the season?
I thought that too.
You know, and then he whispers in the mouse after David comes and projects to him, and the mouse runs to Sid, and you know, I think those things combine and what's going to happen happens. But one thing I remembered that I wanted to talk about that I thought was great. What did you guys make when David and Farouk were talking and he talks about love and not being able to make someone love you? And he said, I've tried. And David says, with who? And he says, with you for 30 years since you were a baby, my baby. I thought that was a really interesting twist to Farouk's character.
Mm-hmm.
That instead of a malignancy, he actually said, like, you know, I wanted you to accept me and you never would accept me. Be prepared for how that feels when you see it in her face. I thought that was a nice turn for Farouk. And Scott, you and I have been talking about maybe the flip of Farouk and David, and it finally comes to fruition.
Yeah, that was when that moment happened. It was interesting because, I mean, obviously, so much of what Farouk has said this season and his character in general, you know, you take as you're at first blush, it always feels like it's just manipulative, and it's, you know, and it's, you know, when he speaks lies, whatever. And that's not to say there isn't any attempted manipulation of the situation here either. But I don't personally think it was a lie, though. I mean, it may be a warped view that he has, which, you know, because he was basically this, you know, basically this parasite living within him and affecting and impacting his life in a pretty negative fashion for, you know, most of his existence. But it is entirely believable that, I wouldn't say from the get-go, but I think over time, that Farouk did look at David as something more than just... because I think the whole thing with Farouk, and I think we talked about this last season was, you know, almost the ultimate revenge, or at least initially on, you know, Professor X, was after he was defeated by him, was, oh, and now, so now I'm going to be a parasite invading the, you know, the body and mind of your offspring, you know. But it's like the thing when someone kind of like kidnapped somebody or takes control of them, and initially it's done because it's done out of anger or revenge or whatever, but over time they come to, in their own way, love the individual if they've had them for, you know, for years or whatever. And I kind of think that's what's happened with, in Farouk's mind, that, because he kind of, you know, this David was his home for 30 years, you know, that, so I do believe there is this weird sort of, you know, it's not just it's a symbiotic relationship, of course, but in Farouk's mind, there is almost kind of a form of love to a certain extent. Which, and obviously the entire first season was about David trying to rid himself of it, which is, you know, rejection. So Farouk trying to spin it into this is the look that you're going to see in Sid's eyes. It's a little bit warped, but there it's like there's truth there, even if it's a little, it's still being seen through Farouk's still kind of crazy eyes.
It is, but at that point, David had tried to make her love him.
Yes.
By erasing her and going into her mind like Farouk went into David's mind.
Yeah. And which is then, it's the flip of them to a certain extent, then.
Right.
I'm a little troubled, though. I mean, obviously, we had limited time in the episode and whatever, and there's certain things we're just not going to see on screen. I'm still a little bit troubled by the implication that during the intervention when Farouk appears, I was like, "Hey guys, you're not actually like just like forgiving Farouk here and giving him a pass, because it sort of kind of feels that way." He walks in. He doesn't appear to be wearing any kind of device from the Loudermilks that would be tempering his abilities, and if he is, it's not, it's certainly not the one that he had on his head before. So I'm like, are they giving Farouk a pass because he's killed, like, I think he's killed more people than David. I'm pretty sure.
Well, although Dan knows, I don't know anything about this, but some people might say that he got a pretty sweet deal for turning state's evidence.
Well, I suppose, you know, by they're all at a point now where pretty much everybody in the room knew that David was some kind of future threat, so that I suppose they figured, you know, whatever was going to happen there, they probably needed to have Farouk there as like a, you know, a weapon against him if things got bad. So it wasn't an easy decision to make, but especially after, yeah, you know, I mean, Farouk definitely was, you know, in various form this season, killing lots of Division III guys.
Yeah, but in a weird way, the way I look at it, excuse me, it's reminiscent of, okay, what are you doing, Brian?
it's my son banging the refrigerator, getting a drink.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you were like working, doing your blacksmith duties or something.
Yeah. I was shoeing a mare.
There you go. Again, talking about looking at the story as things that happen in, you know, in the real world, we can think of any number of times in history, even the last 30 odd years, where the government decides to, you know, kind of look the other way and be, you know, even ally themselves or prop up someone who, you know, is kind of a horrible dictator type person. And this usually would be a situation in the Middle East, the way they treated Saddam Hussein for a while until they decided not to, that kind of a thing. The way they propped up other people like Noriega for a while until they decided no more, whatever. I'm kind of thinking that's kind of the way that we're looking at the situation with Farouk. The fact that there's the Middle Eastern thing is I'll say is entirely coincidental. No, it's not. But I definitely was thinking that during, like, oh, it's kind of like we'll look this way because, you know, they think it serves the greater good, or, you know, or helps to defeat the potential greater bad here, I guess. Again, one of the things we kept saying last week was, I'm knowing that this is inevitably David's going to be the villain, I'm really more curious about season three than I am about the finale. And so one of the things going into season three is what part, how major a part is Farouk going to be playing, and how does that play? And will he be a character that one can trust, since David is now really, I'm pretty sure by the end of this, he's pretty much gone. He's totally gone to the other side at this point. So it's fascinating the way to watch a show that's really gone that direction that hard. Again, there's very few shows that have done anything like that. I mean, you can kind of say sort of the Walter White thing with Breaking Bad, but this is just a bit more extreme in a shorter amount of time. So it's risky, but I think this entire season's been kind of risky. I just don't know if it's worked as much as one would have liked it to have.
Yeah, wish they'd take a year off or something and just, like, tighten up the script a bit before they make anything else, or before they make any more Fargo. They should just take some time, you know, think it through, work some stuff out, and just do something really good again.
Yes, I agree. It's one of those things, like, just, yeah, tighten it up. And we've got an interesting direction the show can go in now. But maybe take a little bit of time to, like, really figure out your storylines for the characters, and maybe just invest a little bit more time in the characters and not as much in, I mean, you can still have all the amazing, great, cool visuals and, you know, audio choices and whatever, but just put some meat back on those bones, you know? And it's kind of like what we were saying with Fargo. I mean, the first two seasons of Fargo were so good, and then the third season was so, you know. I mean, again, I like this season. I didn't love it the way I loved the first season, and even though there were great moments this season, great things, and great things that I really, like, bowled me over, but as a whole, it didn't have the. It just was never as satisfying as season one was. Although David actually becoming the villain, for me, weirdly, was probably one of the few truly satisfying things about the episode for me. Because I was like, okay, they really went there. Good. My favorite thing, I loved him going to get Lenny. That it's like, that's kind of the running thing at the end of every season. Someone's going to get Lenny. No. Season one ends with Oliver driving off with Lenny. No, this one ends with David leaving with Lenny. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, seeing Dave and Lenny do stuff together, you know, some kind of, like, you know, bad guy road trip thing. I mean, I'm sure has potential to be cool and all, but I do kind of think they're, like, missing an opportunity where, like, you know, David's a bad guy now. Now just don't have him on screen for half a season and, like, develop, like, some of the other characters as they try to figure out what to do, you know. Yeah. Have more, like, you know, have more Loudermilks, have more Clark. I mean, that dude, like, you know, that dude owns the screen when they give him a chance to say something. Just, like, let them do a plan. Like, explain something about Admiral, you know, whatever. You know, just
yeah, do more. I mean, that's another example of something. The whole Fukuyama thing with the Vermillions, I mean, can we be honest? Other than the fact, like, oh, it's a weird, warped-looking visual and kind of strange, but did it really, but after 10 episodes, did it really add anything to this season?
No, I mean, it's something that, like, you know, they would have been better served, like, introducing it, like, towards the end of the season and then, like, give us something to think about over the, like, you know, over the hiatus instead of just, like, this is how it is, and then they just never really go anywhere with it over, you know, 10 episodes.
Yeah.
I really think that they, you know, just little, you know, small errors in execution.
Right. And I know they gave us his little origin in that one episode. I'm sorry, guys. That
no.
It didn't matter. It didn't matter.
But wouldn't wouldn't it have almost been cooler to play off what Dan was saying, to meet Fukuyama and the Vermillion at the trial, and like to totally see our team suddenly going to this person we haven't seen before,
yes.
And then David flips in front of all those people and makes the switch, and now we go, ooh, who are these people? What are they going to do next season?
Right.
Because I think the way they used them was really pedestrian this year. Like,
yeah,
they were Potter. Cool, but they didn't do anything.
It became one of those, oh, it's cool for coolness' sake.
Exactly. And Holly is awesome in the way he makes things look, but sometimes sometimes in a strange way, it's almost like David when they did the visuals of him putting all the players in place for the final battle.
Mm-hmm.
Holly almost makes a beautiful chess piece that never moves, and it looks beautiful and it's great. And I like this season. I'm not trying to crap on it, but that you have all these wonderful toys in the toy box that don't get played with very much. And maybe they'll pay off, maybe not, but there was stuff that was frustrating. And Scott, you and I have talked about, and I think it's happened since Dan hasn't been on, but it may have happened right at the time he took a break, is when Tonami went away. You know, like they never really did anything with him. He's in this cool place that maybe something could happen. That's been our frustration,
right.
Is all these great characters that never really paid off.
Oh yeah. He was just, the problem is you took characters and you just used them as plot devices and nothing more.
Right.
Melody was a plot device, but never really fleshed out as a character, and her only, other than her little bit with Oliver in this episode, her only moment of significance on the show is unfortunate because it's not really Melanie. It's Farouk speaking through Melanie.
Exactly.
Tonami is a character who's got a very interesting ability, and you kind of want to really... And we got a little bit about him in the previous season and stuff about the whole thing about his the death of his mother or whatever. But I kind of want... I found him fascinating. I kind of wanted to do more of them. And they went the other way with him. And they spent some time inside his head and gave us like the most obvious thing possible. It's like, oh, he wishes he could be in a situation where he just doesn't remember anything. Yeah, okay, that's it. That's all you're gonna give me. He's just gonna be sitting there in a garden. And then he goes from being I just noticed something. So his little fantasy in his mind that he's trapped in is that he's in a garden, and where does he end up after he dies? Inside a tree. So there's a botany thing going on with that character.
Yeah, well, I mean they just have a lot of good actors, and they're just not, you know, they're just spending too much time like doing cute stuff and having like, you know, people with like chattery teeth like for no reason, just like wasting screen time when they could be developing these people. And just, I mean,
you're absolutely right. I mean, it it's one of those things where you need to have a balance. Of you can have these ear, like the chattering teeth thing. It's a good example of something. The couple of times, you see that a couple of times, there is something definitely different and even eerie and strange about that. But how much more time are you going to spend on that in those first few episodes? You gotta be able to balance those little quirky, odd, strange, cool, fun things with something of substance.
Like the cafeteria, you know, having the cafeteria be weird is cool because they can spend time in the cafeteria having like meaningful conversations.
Exactly.
Exactly.
That's a freaking perfect example of something where you can get away. You can have your waffles and eat them too. I'm very proud of myself for that. And I have to say it, excuse me. It's funny how, as we're watching what Noah Hawley's done for the last couple of years, we seem to be aware of how one thing influences another. Like, when we were talking about Fargo Season 3, we felt that Legion might have impacted how he went about Fargo Season 3. Either he took his eye off the ball a little bit, or there were certain visual flourishes that they wouldn't have normally done on Fargo in the previous two seasons, but seemed to have a Legion feel to it, whatever. It doesn't. I also think, I mean, because they were mentioned in articles and how he's influenced by him more than a few times over the last year. I kind of think, and don't hate me for this, I kind of think Hawley might have caught a teensy tiny bit of David Lynch disease here. And I think he watched something like Twin Peaks, and he's a big Lynch guy. You know he's a big Twin Peaks guy. You know it. He is. And I kind of think that could have, whether it be subconsciously or not, influenced him a little bit. Because he did, there are little, stylistic flourishes that they have, and they both have, a great deal. I mean, no one had probably more creative license than Lynch did with Showtime, apparently. But they certainly, FX has certainly let, and Marvel, quite frankly, has certainly let Hawley kind of run wild with what he's doing here. But I kind of think there's a certain Lynchian thing about things that kind of look really cool, but they might not end up really adding up to much or leading anywhere or meaning anything. And I know between you and I, Dan, I'm the one who gets way more frustrated than you do. You kind of go along for the ride. I will get frustrated when things don't necessarily go anywhere, or it's like, yeah, that's cool, but could you give me something a bit more, instead of wasting my time with this other stuff? And I think Hawley did that to us, not to as maddening an extent as Lynch does, because I think that's what kind of makes, that's also what makes it's like, it's frustrating and yet genius at the same time with Lynch. Like he's so frustrating, and then you kind of end up going, maybe I kind of enjoy this after all. I'm enjoying the torture of it.
I mean, Lynch can do that kind of stuff, and I mean, I wouldn't say he necessarily gets away with it, but it's just when he does it, it has a stronger chance of working than, like, than, for example, this show did. It's not like, no, Hawley's bad at this kind of thing, and he's definitely not like, he hasn't gone like the Kurt Sutter route where, like, everything is like a song that's like, somebody that he's like related to. Or, like, over long episodes here. But so it's not going to be that kind of, like, FX blank check thing here. But David Lynch has been doing this kind of thing for a long time. So, I mean, so he can make it work. But it's a very, very specific thing that David Lynch does. And just, you can't expect, just because, you've had, the Fargo first couple seasons awesome, first season of this awesome. Noah Hawley's book, I really enjoyed that too. So he knows how to do good stuff. But it doesn't mean you can be David Lynch.
Well, what Hawley is great at, in my opinion, is when he's his best, he has one foot in the heart and one foot in the sort of quirk. And when he straddles that line, he does super compelling stuff like he did last season. I feel like this season he went a little more with the quirk and not enough heart. And I think that's what's lacking, and probably what Scott misses from, is that it's awesome to have something great to look at, but if it doesn't move you, it's not as compelling. And I think there were lots of stuff this season, like for instance, the thing I think of, the drain with the big chain, like that's cool to look at, but and I get it's a metaphor, but instead of doing that, like, develop a little more story of the characters,
right?
I just want to say before I forget though that. Kudos to the way that Rachel Keller and Dan Stevens played the last thing.
Yes.
Because as I've been sitting here thinking about it, the thing we do like about Hawley storytelling is when it hits, it really does hit. And when he says to her, I mean, I felt sorry for him, even though he'd done what he'd done, because all these people suddenly said, agree to treatment or we'll kill you. They didn't say, like, agree to treatment or we're going to put a collar on you and lock you away. And I know he's dangerous, but they said, agree to help or we will kill you. And he says to Sid, I want you to say it to me. And that's when she drops that, you know, you sexually assaulted me, and he falls apart. And that's, you know, which is great on her, the way she faces him and walks to the edge of the unit. But man, when he makes the turn and does the, you know what, like, that's it, I'm done, you had your chance. And you know what? That's the same thing he told Oliver when he tortured him. He's right. Like, you know, don't say I didn't give you your chance before he does what he does to Oliver. When he flips and you see him flip and then he goes to get Lenny and she says, I mean, the great line, it sounded like a 50s, you know, what about Blondie? There ain't no Blondie no more. Huh. Yeah. You know, like a film noir.
Yeah.
I'm sure he flips. And I thought that they landed what you and I have talked about, Scott, about how fast would it happen. And we guessed sooner and it was sooner. Mm-hmm. I thought they landed that perfect. It's just sort of the episode arc it took to get here. Didn't pay off with the other characters, but I thought they stuck the landing on David and Sid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I can't be negative about the season as a whole, because the two characters I'm most interested in following, and in my mind, the two leads, or to a certain extent, that was fascinating. Their relationship and where it ends up going was one of the most compelling, was the most compelling thing of the season, quite frankly. And yeah, and talking about character moments, I mean, even when you look back at all ten episodes, I mean, yeah, there are crazy visual fun things like, you know, like that dance off and a couple of the other things. But as far as scenes that had resonance, the things that we're going to remember. We're going to remember this scene. We're going to remember that scene with Clark and Sid having that conversation a couple episodes ago, which was one of, like, the really nicest moments on the show. We're going to have the scene when, you know, the Loudermilks, you know, talking to each other over at the restaurant that time. Those are really when the show, to me, works. I mean, reminded, you know, Holly does do character very well. When as we know from the first two seasons of Fargo, which why I keep coming back to that, not just because it's a Holly show, it's because the both seasons had a lot of characters, but you never felt any of the characters were really shortchanged. They really got significant screen time and they all played an important part. I mean, especially if you look at season two, because I think it feels like there's more characters in season two than season one. There may very well be. I think there are. And it's just frustrating because, you know, as we were saying, and so, you know, you've introduced us to these characters, most of these characters in season one. Season two is when you had the chance to kind of expound upon them. And you didn't really bother to a certain extent. I mean, the only characters you really expounded on at all, you had the Sid backstory episode. So you filled in more about her past, even though we kind of knew this already, but you got to actually see it. So it's kind of like, oh, that's good. It's a really great episode. Even though she kind of told us this in the first season, if I'm not mistaken. And you had the multiple David episode, which I guess gives us more about David and what he could have potentially have been or could be, I guess. Maybe they could have spent time on the other characters. You know?
Yeah.
I would have liked Clark. I'd love a Clark episode. That would be great. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Pre-scarring. I mean, I know we got that one episode. Wasn't it like the opening of one episode? Maybe it was the finale last season, actually, where we got a lot of Clark backstory all like within a few minutes. But I'd like to spend more. You're right. That actor is always kind of fun to watch. I would like to spend more time with him.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you guys are right. I mean, I think Holly just kind of needs to just focus on what he's good at. I mean, and, you know, make really good, interesting characters and spend less time trying to be Kubrick or Lynch. You know, I mean, it's okay to do that kind of like, you know, really, you know, the really out there interesting stuff, you know, to a degree, But you have to have, like, the show has to have a backbone before you can actually get away with that and have it actually, you know, have it work. I keep saying actually, so screw that.
That's okay.
But, I mean, that's what they do, you know, spend an episode developing a character, spend an episode developing another character, and then, you know, remake 2001 the next week, and then spend another week, you know, because, doing some whatever and do that.
Because, I mean, again, like, the Lynch influence, I think, is really the, to repeat a common phrase, it's the going, the it's the style over substance thing. And that's where I don't want Hawley to go, because he's a as you know from his book and also from those other shows, he can be a very good writer, like really write really sharp, great dialogue, really well developed characters, as we've seen. Put that into the show. Don't make it all about, wow, you know, we know the show has that reputation of being a trip. You know what? You can still be a trip and yet give us more to go on with characters and story than what you've been giving us this season. But at least
we'll enjoy the trip more if we care about the person going on the trip.
Exactly. Always. That's actually an issue. I know that the people who don't care that much for Legion have is like, I don't really care that much about the characters because I just never warmed up them. That's, I think, an issue that I'm pretty sure you and I have to whatever degree about a show like Westworld. My problem with Westworld is I don't really care much about any of the central characters on that show. And if I don't really care that much about them, then I don't find it quite as compelling. Then it becomes the same kind of thing. Well, it's very well shot. The cinematography is nice, and there's some cool moments or whatever. But it doesn't add up to that much to me because I don't care that much about the characters involved. And now this season is like, okay, you know, well done. You've made me care about a character who's like such a minor character in the grand scheme of things. Does it really matter that I even care about him? You know,
right? Right. I think. Yeah. When I think of what Hawley does best, and, you know, to be fair, if I think of TV writers, I mean, he's in my top three or four that I want to see what he does. I mean, obviously right now, I think we're all in agreement that we pretty much will watch anything Vince Gilligan does.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but Hawley's up there. It's not to, it's just, he didn't realize this, but if I think, I just sat as we were talking, I was sitting here thinking, what, the beginning of this episode was cool. It looked cool. It had good music. It propelled the story. And you see David coming into his powers, you know, and I loved it. But if I have to think of the problem we're seeing, it's that no matter what the episode, there's always a cool title card. It's always super, you know, thoughtful and cool, and I appreciate that, but there wasn't always the character moving. And when he did stuff like when Carrie, badass Carrie, whipped ass, like that's a, you know, you can do cool camera tricks, and it's compelling because we like to watch her do that, right? Mm. When we saw Autonomy reach out to David, you can do cool camera tricks with that. But it's choosing a character we care about. It's when we have these sort of Lynchian side trips to things that aren't propelling the characters or moving it forward. And it's probably worse that we were already frustrated that it took so long to get to the body. That we wasted time on those side trips and didn't spend the time with the characters.
Yeah, I agree. So, anything else?
last thought. Yeah. No Amy. No Amy. I thought maybe we'd see some Amy.
If there's one speculation prediction thing that I tanked on, that was it. Not a whiff of Amy anywhere in this episode. Next season. So, yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. But, and also, yeah, and as far as the Amy thing is concerned, just to bring that, it wasn't in this episode at all, but one of the things I'll be curious about for season three is we saw in one episode there seems to be a conflict with Lenny in Amy's body, that she's haunted by either an imagined version of Amy, or there really is something to it with Legion you don't know. I'm wondering if that was just confined to that one episode, or we may see Amy reoccur in season 3 as kind of like the voice inside Lenny's head, so to speak, since she's technically taken over her body.
I would like that a lot, and I think there's a lot to look forward to with seeing David and Lenny being able to play big and bad. But the problem is that can grow weary quick. But I think, you know, the way Aubrey Plaza has played Lenny, it's nice to see her unleashed a little and back to the old Lenny.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. There's a lot of potential there, well, but I was really impressed with Dan Stevens' turn to Dark and liked it a lot.
Oh, I mean, if there's one of the best things about the episode is his overall performance. I mean, during the intervention and when all the things you were mentioning before, when, you know, him first being defensive and incredulous or whatever, but when, you know, Sid really puts it to him, especially when he's confronted with what he did to her, and then when he keeps repeating about how he's a good person, that he deserves love, that's where, if I was going to feel any bit of sadness for him, it was during that. Because that's something I think many of us would want to say or want to feel, you know? But usually when a character is doing that, that kind of is the signal before something horrible is about to happen to them and they die. You know, it's kind of like Charlie I'll be the one bringing up a Star Trek thing. Kind of like Charlie in that old Star Trek episode. Like, don't let them take me. I don't want to go. I want to stay.
Star Trek reference. So good job.
But also bear in mind, his powers aren't that much. And David's powers is kind of something there, because Charlie in that Star Trek episode, he's got these all-encompassing, like, wow, he could probably pretty much do anything. You know, he's kind of, you know, he's like the Q of his time. Look, 2 Star Trek. I'm totally it's because it's making up for you not being here the other weeks. And David's also like, wait, what's the limit to his power and what can or he can't do? Because it seems like he can kind of do anything, you know. So, of course, one of the things I'm wondering about, okay, so he feels everyone's betrayed him now, and he's really kind of gone to the dark side. Gotcha. We can say he's a villain, he's a bad guy. Gotcha. So what does that mean, though? What is it he's exactly going to do? What's his motivation now? You know what I'm saying? You know, what's his plan? What is it he wants to do now? I don't know. I mean, does he want to just kill? I mean, that would seem a little weird. Like, oh, I just want to destroy the world. That doesn't make any sense. Rule the world, maybe. Then he goes into that old version of David from the multiple David episode or something. So I'm kind of wondering where they're going to go with that. And I suppose his character, if I understand, his character kind of is somewhat villainous or something like that in the comic books. I've never read one. I've never read anything about it. I almost want to cheat and find out, at least maybe Wikipedia or something, because I'm kind of wondering. So what does David do now? I don't know. Because at least I knew what.
That's the interesting question. Obviously, if he wanted just to destroy them all, he would have blinked out and could have blinked back. You know, he just says to hell with it and goes. Where does he go and what does he do?
Well, I'm hoping there'll be at least one scene, since since with David's character especially, and Fruit does this as well, but David's character kind of keeps transporting them to different alternate weird, wacky planes of existence, and you know, they could be, it could be anywhere. It'll be really funny, just for the heck of it, just for like for at least one from one scene, have him transported somewhere where it's clearly a takeoff on Downton Abbey. I really kind of want that. I mean,
oh, or he could take Lenny and they could appear in Pawnee.
Oh, Dave, Legion meets Parks and Rec.
Legion meets Ron Swanson.
Oh man. That would be excellent. So, overall, I mean, I definitely thought it was a good episode. I mean, as far as season finales go, we kind of what we were mainly tuning in to see, we got to see. So I think it was satisfying in that regard. I love the train in the background. By the way, it's so much cooler than a dog barking in the background.
I told you, like, it hasn't happened in tonight. This is the third train tonight.
Oh, no, I love it. I think it's awesome. But overall, I loved season one so much. It was, I mean, I would give season one an A. The only reason I don't give it an A plus is only because, you know, just, if it could have been just a little bit more of this or a little bit more of that, would be an A plus. This season, B minus. Picking B minus.
I would give it a B, but I think that the visual stuff that I like. I mean, even some of the stuff that didn't pay off, it was cool before you knew it wouldn't pay off.
Yes,
to see some of that. So. I think looking back on it, to rate it downward, discounts how I felt at the time I saw it. So there was stuff that I saw, like if the first time you saw the Minotaur, if you knew its arc, you wouldn't have loved it, but it still was cool, and you got some of that. So, I mean, I would give it a B. I think that it was a letdown last season. I give an A, a strong A.
Yeah.
This is a B that, you know, I'm not, it might be a B. If you told me B minus or B plus, I wouldn't fight with you.
Right.
Last year, if you told me Legion was like a B show, I would be like, you're crazy. But there was stuff that as I watched each episode kept me interested, kept me wondering. It's unfortunate it didn't pay off the way I wanted and didn't pay off for the characters.
Right.
And if you told me B minus, I might go along with that just because of the complete waste of Gene Smart. But I still enjoyed it. I liked the way it looked. I thought it stuck the landing, so I would go with a B.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I'm trying to not let my certain biases I have influence me here. For example, you know, on one hand, I loved the opportunity to get to hear Jon Hamm, you know, a voice appear on the show and do these fun little narrations, whatever. But at a certain point, if I'm being honest, it's like, okay, enough is enough. And they kind of went, I think they went one or two too far with it. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, I mean, even, although I then will go back on that and say, but in a weird way, when we got to this finale, realize a lot of what we're talking about and what he was talking about really is about the character of David and now in his delusions and how he sees things and how other people see him and their own fear and whatever. And you realize, oh, that's what they were talking about all along. We were all busy going with the Farouk stuff whenever, like, no, he's actually talking about David. But when I add up all the screen time it took up, could that have been used more productively? Maybe. Did it? If you strip that out of the show, does it impact it? Does it really change anything? No. And that's you know. And Holly again should know better. You know, that's kind of a rule thing. If you can strip out an entire character, an entire storyline, and it really doesn't affect anything at all, then you probably don't need it. But then it's just there just to, you know, just to be cool or look pretty. And I, a lot of, and again, I go back and forth because I really like the way some of that stuff was shot It was different and fun. So that's where I'm kind of torn. I mean, that I'm sticking with the B minus.
I'm going to give the show a B, but if my theory is proven correct and this season of Legion leads to Jon Hamm being in Fargo, I'll probably bump it up to like A minus.
I love that. Like,
I will agree with that. I was all excited. They showed that Jon Hamm was at the Yankee game the other night with Lorne Michaels and one of the other SNL guys. And I was like, why is Jon Hamm there? He's a big Cardinal fan. He's why is he at the Yankees? Because of Lorne Michaels. That's why. God, he'd be great on a season of Fargo. That'd be awesome.
Yes.
I got a chill. I can only think of one project I'd rather see him in, and that's something I wrote. Anyway, so... Okay, I think we can wrap it up then, eh?
Yep.
Let's wrap this up. So, if you enjoyed this podcast, you would probably enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. Look us up on Facebook. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like Legion and Fargo and a bunch of others. You can find us on iTunes. Type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. And hell, if you type Serious TV Drama Podcast in Google, you can probably find us in a bunch of other places. By the way, I discovered something finally. So you know that our podcast, with very few views at all, last 20, 30, I don't know how many episodes, are also on YouTube. So I've discovered something. So YouTube, bless them or not bless them, whatever. They've got people who listen to stuff, whatever. So every episode that we've had of this, or when we've talked about other shows, where we've used music that we were clearly, you know, there are copyright issues, are marked that way. So I think it's fascinating because, you know, what they do is it's like what I've said before, because this podcast, as of right, you know, as of the 200 and now 12 episodes, it's never been monetized. And there's a number of reasons that we don't need to get into during the podcast why that's the case. Since that's not the case, no one's pursuing us for any legal issues. What they do, however, this is the fascinating thing. The podcast, when it's on YouTube, is monetized for them, for the copyright holder. So that way, so for example, if one went to, you know, whatever podcast, it was about, you know, The Flash and whatever, because that might have had a song in it or something. Maybe there'll be an ad that plays before the podcast goes on. And that's how whoever owns the rights to whatever song was using it, you know, they get a few cents here or there. I just didn't know that, and I just when I noticed it, I found the page that showed all this information to me, and I was like, going, "Oh my god!" I didn't know it was just more fascinating. I was clicking on each one, and I was like, "Oh wow!" You know, like this season, the episode of Legion, where like say we use "Swinging on a Star," for example, that showed up there, pretty much any song we ever use, or any piece of music from the show, whatever. However, Dan, what's fascinating is like they catch us on that, but like the music that we use for the intro and the outro doesn't seem to be a problem. I think that's because, you know, there were a few that had like, you know, three songs mentioned or two songs mentioned, but I was noticed like, hey, you know what? All these different Legion podcasts, no one mentions the fact that we're using music like from an anime, you know, an 8-bit version of an animated series thing, whatever. Huh. So like, so apparently that's okay. I just thought that was fascinating. So a little boring podcast insight for the listeners. Anyway, where was I? Oh, by the way, you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. Oh, someone was asking me about the podcast the other day, and they wanted to follow us. And I was like, oh, I thought they meant on Twitter. And they said, no, you need to have an Instagram account. I was like, we do? It never occurred to me to have an Instagram account for our podcast. So
it would just be pictures of like cats and dogs and trains and Scott not running around the block, that kind of thing.
All right, enough inside baseball here.
Oh, and baseball, too.
And baseball. Well, it could have been a forum for all your pretty pictures of rocks and water and stuff, whatever it is you take pictures of. Yeah. Pretty rocks and pretty water. Anyway, let's wrap this up. Well, actually, we already wrapped it up. Let's end this right now. So that's it for this season of Legion. We are still trying to figure out what else we may be doing over the next couple months. Usually we kind of slow things down for the summer because of outdoor activities and such. As I mentioned in the last podcast, we have a couple, one or two ideas we're knocking about. So you'll know when we know probably what we're going to do. I just finished Crown Season 2, by the way. Really good. And
I have a few episodes left to watch, but hopefully you guys will let me back on the podcast when I finish it up. So thanks for having me, Scott and Brian.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, God, Dave.
Oh, boy. Hey, Brian, can you play music? Because if you can write music for us, you know, then I really can't get rid of him. We can monetize this. Can you play keyboard? Do you have a Casio or something?
Wait, hold on. I feel like right now we're basically making Dan David. We're trying to freak him out and turn him. So.
We're turning. Well, it's not like Dan has a reputation for being, you know, a bad guy or anything.
Volatile.
No. Killer. They always call him a killer. They never call him a murderer. Anyway, all right. With all that said, I'm gonna start the rounds of goodnight with goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight.
Goodnight, everybody.